So welcome back to those in person and those on Zoom. Again, tremendous crowds, which you'll never know about the other side. We'll never reveal the competition and how it's doing unless you have a spouse on the other end and you could trade notes later. Or you could just sign on yourself, and then you'll pad both stats. That's the way to do it. I've been getting wonderful emails the whole week of great feedback, and also people asking for links, recordings of these shiurim. They are on YU Torah. It's more buried in the Daily Digest if you can make it all the way through. There's a link to YU Torah, or you can just type in Abramovitz on yutorah.org, and you will access all these past shiurim. So I want to start with a story that I heard about three friends who were stranded on a desert island for many, many months. And finally, they discover a magic lamp, as all great stories go. They rub the magic lamp, and the genie comes out and says, "I'll give each of you one wish." So the first person says, "I really miss my family. I wish I was back home." He disappears. He goes back home. And the second person says, "I really miss my drinking buddies. I wish I was back home." Poof, he disappears. He goes back home. The third person says, "I really like those guys. I miss those guys. I wish they were back here." Poof. And they come back. So it's important to have friends, important to have companionship. We all do many, many things to avoid being lonely. But it's important not to do it at the expense of being selfish. We don't want to be a taker. As we discussed last week, the idea of giving and taking, the idea, the root of all evil in the world, or Dessler opined, is rooted in the idea of taking. And today, he's going to tell us how we can take last week's idea about being divine, being godly, being someone who gives because it's the right thing to do, being giving to build relationships, and talk today very practically about the relationships that are all based on giving. This koach hanesina, this idea of friendship. He's going to talk about children, he's going to talk about friends, and he's going to talk about spouses, relationship between husband and wife. The goal is to end tonight by 9:40, so we have time to go down for Rabbi Galler's Devari Chizik, so hopefully we'll have time to read a little bit together, discuss some ideas maybe in some more recent studies in psychology, and talk about building healthier and happier and more giving relationships. So we are on page 35. I will share the sources on the screen again. A quick trick, if you don't want to see the sources on the screen, there is a line between me, the speaker, and the sources. You could just slide that line to the left. You click on it and slide. You make the sources smaller and me sources bigger and me smaller. No. Yeah, the other way around. Or if you want to just see the sources, you don't want to see me. But if you want to make me bigger and mute the sources, you can do that as well. So we're going to start from the bottom of page 35. Perek Dalet. V'shoresh Ahava. He's going to explain to us how the Koach HaNesina is related to love. In Perek Dalet, at the bottom of page 35, he says, "Ein adam ba'olam she'ein bo nitzutz koach hanesina." Every human being has this godly sense of giving within him. Zayireh b'simchaso. And that could be evidenced and witnessed by what makes people happy. She'einena shalema b'yoso yechidi. People cannot be entirely happy if they are in isolation. V'chein b'ga'aguin ala chevra asher me'imke hanefesh yavou. This desire people have, this drive that they have, a need for companionship, a need for camaraderie. Vizelecha, also I'll prove it to you, he says, ki hinei onesh beis ha'asurim, the great punishment of being put in jail, ha'afrada me'achevra, being separated from the rest of society, la'onesh chamer yechashev. Why is being in jail a bad thing? You could have said it's because you don't get to go to the ball games you want to go to or watch the things you want to watch too. You only can watch what they're putting on the TV. Poor, poor people, right? But the idea is, he's saying the real tragedy, the real reason why prison is such a harrowing threat of punishment is because of the isolation aspect. Umahem hagagu and halalu, what is the source of this drive, this desire people have for camaraderie, for friendship? Nitzatz koach hanesina. It's a sense of wanting to give. It's a sense of wanting to share with others. On page 36, he explains what he means. He says, kol adam yisavel abanim. There is a natural human desire to want to have children. V'yesh b'zesh shtei b'chinot. And there are two aspects to why people have this idea of having children. Number one, aleph. Ki yargish es banav sheyiyu kehemsheich la'atzmuso. Person gets a sense that children will be a continuity for his own existence. La'achar sheyipareid me'olamo. After a person departs, after 120, children will carry on his legacy. That's aleph. Beis, the second reason why people have this innate desire to have children, he says, ki yargish tzorach v'hachreach, person senses this great internal need, sheyielo es asher yahavenu, a need to have someone to love, Yetiv lo, and a need to have someone to do good to. It's already hearkening back to last week of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the idea of God created us not because he needs anything, except for a need to be a giver, a need to give to others. And he continues, V'chein hinen eroim, b'holchem aririm, for those who unfortunately don't have children, for infertility reasons, or for life reasons, or for choice reasons, those who don't have children, he says, asher yachnisu yisomim lebesam, very often they adopt a child, v'hayu lehem lebanim, and they treat them like their own child. The gam yesh keila, and there are other people who don't have biological children, asher kelev, oshar balei chayim yikrivu aleihem. They get a pet. Where does that come from? Why do they get a pet? They don't want to be alone. And in his view, they want to be able to give to someone. V'yetivu lehem kasher ya'asu lebanim. And they treat the pet like they treat children. They get them all dressed up. They call them pet names. I guess literally pet names. They put them in fancy clothing. They take them outside. They take them to activities. They make it the profile picture on social media. Halogam zela'os, he says. That's also a proof. Asher shorash koach anasina tamunhu. This desire to give, this desire to have people around in our lives or objects around in our lives to give to is an innate, inalienable koach within a person, the need to give to others. And he asks now a very important question. The second aspect. Oh, he's going to explain how the two actually connect. How number one about having continuity and number two about having someone to give to. You're going to see you're actually somehow connected. Very good. So here he asks the million-dollar question. Kan, where it's underlined on page 36, Kan she'ila yafa omedes lefanenu. Here is the million-dollar question. Heina ava v'hanasina baos kachas. We find that there's a connection, there's a correlation between love and giving. Ha'im hanasina, he told us ha'ava, is that because giving is a result of love? You love someone, you want to give to them? Ola hepech, maybe really it's the opposite. Ha'ahava Ba'am and Hanasina. What if love is created from giving, a lifetime of giving? Right, this is Psych 101. I teach you in Psych 101, correlation does not equal causation. Right? You could do studies, I don't know, for example, you do a study and you find that higher SAT scores are linked with wealth. People who have higher SAT scores tend to have more money. So you might be inclined to say, you know why? It's because people who do well on their SATs are guaranteed or more likely to get better jobs. Or, what if it's that people who have more money, better jobs, are born into families where there's a lot of money, tend to get private tutors, tend to have an environment of education where they do better on their SAT scores? Just because SAT scores and wealth are correlated doesn't necessarily mean that they have to be a cause one way or the other. Either one could be the cause, or maybe some third factor is the cause of both of them. Reminds me of that cartoon my psych professor put up in Psych 101, where a person's talking to his friend and he says, I used to think that correlation meant causation, but then I took a psych class and now I no longer think that. The friend says, it sounds like the class helped. He says, maybe. I don't know. Can't prove that. Right? So he's going to explain now that the two sides of this correlation. What does he mean? Horgalnu lachshov es anasina l'tolda sahava. We tend to think that we give to those that we love. Kila sher yahava adam yetiv lo, makes sense. Why do I give to my family as opposed to strangers? Because I love my family. I have this innate love for them, and that's why I give to them more. Aval hasfara hashniyah, there's another side to this. What's the second possibility? Ki yahav ha'adam es pri ma'asa. People love what they produce. Behargisho asher chelek min atmiyuso behem hu. Because he feels a sense of himself in the object. So Neil, this would be how you put the two together. If Aleph was that people feel that their children are a continuity of themselves, he's going to argue now that by investing and giving and doing chesed with other people, you invest a little bit of yourself into them, and as they become extensions of you, you begin to love them because you love yourself, and they become an extension of you. He gives examples. And Benya, it could be a child, asher yileido imein, either you gave birth to or you raised the child, o chaya asher gidel, or a pet, imsimeach asher nata, could be a plant. You spend years and years taking care of a plant, watering it day to day, opening up the shades, making sure to give it the most loving care, only playing nice music. Studies show plants grow by good music. Fine. Person invests years into anything. Imgam in hadomim, even an inanimate object. It could be a house that he built. It could be a project. It could be any program that you put yourself into. If you invest anything into anything, hineu davuk l'maasei adab b'yava, a person is attached to his own production, his own work with love, ki es atmo yimatze behem, because he finds a little bit of himself, of his own giving, in that. And he quotes from Sevin Chazal at the end of that paragraph, im chafetz ata lehidabek bi ahavas chaverecha, if you really want to love somebody, have a no save and no sim betovaso. Strive to help him out. Start to care about his well-being. Start to inquire about how he's doing and actually make efforts to try to help him out. What a powerful other side, right? He's saying that love is not something that either you feel or you don't. There's those naturally you're going to love, and there are those that, good luck to you. You're never going to feel any affection toward. He's teaching us that this koach hanasina, this power of giving that we have within us, is actually what creates love. And he brings a proof from the Torah. In the next paragraph, he brings a proof from the Torah, where the Torah is describing in Devarim Perek Chaf about people who get to go home from war, because it would be so tragic if they passed away in battle. And the Torah gives three examples. A person who built a house and didn't get a chance to inaugurate and live in the house. A person who plants a vineyard, starts a business, and doesn't get to actually start the business in practice. And third, a person who gets engaged and doesn't get a chance to actually marry the woman. And he says, where it's underlined over here, the hook shoes Elazel, the Torah gives these examples side by side. Yan asher tidameh ahavasenu as priyavodasenu ki ahavas erison. By comparing it to marriage, Torah is saying anything you invest yourself in has that great desire of love, just like marriage, just like romantic love, intimate love. Person invests in a house, invests in a business, in an organization. Blood, sweat, and tears. You give your time, you give your energy, you give your resources, you care. That's what creates love. The Torah says for all these people, it would be tragic if they perished in war. They have to go back. Not just the person madly in love with a woman. Person madly in love with their business. Because it's the same root. It's the same idea. The idea is anything you give to, anyone or anything you invest yourself in is going to be what you love. It's going to be where you feel an emotional connection, where you feel that attachment. He tells over here at the bottom of page 36 a very harrowing story. Pretty heavy story, as he calls it. We'll do Torah Shabbat Peh for just a few minutes. He tells this story about, he's trying to prove this side, that it's not that we give to those we already love, it's that we love those that we give to. And the reason we tend to love our families, and his example, children, more than other people, is not because there's necessarily, inherently, a love for children. It's because, as parents, you take care of your children from the minute that they're born. And Mitzvah Shem, not a moment too soon. But from the minute that they're born, they're helpless. You have to give them everything. They can't sit up, they can't open their eyes, basically, they can't do anything. When a parent has to care for and provide and supply nourishment and supply protection and supply support in every single manner, that's what creates the love. And he proves it from a story he witnessed. He says there was a family during World War II, very sweet family, husband and wife and a very young infant. And unfortunately, as war broke out, the family was separated. And the father and the infant were together for many, many years until, after displacement camps, the family finally reunited. It was many, many years. And for all those years, the woman wasn't able to see and be spending time with her child. And the father was the one taking care of the child for all those years. And he says, eventually, when peace reigned and everyone got back together again, something very, very strange happened. Look at page 37 on the top. Behine pele, something remarkable happened. Lo yachul v'takin es asher chaser lehem bizmano. They couldn't make up the time that was lost. Ahavas ha'av v'bino ha'isa yoser amuka u'devuka. We tend to think that a mother's love is much stronger, a mother's love is more intense. Well, in this family, after 5 years of just the child and the father together, the mother on the other side of the country, the love between the father and the child was so much stronger than the love that the mother felt for her biological child. She left the child when the child was still a baby. And he had already grown up by then. In her mind, her eyes, it was like another child. It wasn't really her child. Tragically, she was still mourning after it and longing, yearning for that baby that she had left behind. But what happened? I thought mother's love is always the strongest. Why in this case did the father's love prevail, become so much stronger? Because you know what happened during those 5 years or 10 years, whatever amount of time it was? The father had a relationship with the child. Father gave and woke up late and fed and provided and protected. The mother, as strong as a mother's love is, apparently, when it was missing that day-to-day giving, that day-to-day investment, that day-to-day involvement, that day-to-day sacrifice, devotion, investment of self into that human being, that robbed them, not just of years and time, but the quality of love, the quality of the relationship was totally different. She felt something was missing. It wasn't her child almost. Because where does the love come from? It comes from giving. What a powerful idea. A very tragic, very sad story, but actually points us in the direction of what to do, how to create love. Because love doesn't come automatically. And in some relationships, love wanes. So you might say, too bad, okay, I'm come, love goes, easy come, easy go. But he's telling us that love is not the starting point. Love is the result of work. Love is the result of giving. Love is the result of investment. If you look at the second paragraph here on 37, halfway down the second paragraph, V'yeshin yan bazeh gam ki be'tivu l'sono. If a person tries to act well and to give to the ones he currently hates, gam hu atzmo tistalek hasina milibo. That is a way to remove the hatred from his heart. V'tikanez tachteh ahavas hanosein el hamakabel mimeno. That is how you begin to love someone. They tell a story about Rabbi Sol Salanter. He was one time on a train back to Vilna. There was a young man on the train who was also traveling to Vilna, and the man was clearly very nervous. It was his first time traveling, and he held these papers in front of him, and he was very, very antsy, and he kept snapping at people around. And he was really, really rude to this old man next to him, who he didn't realize was the great Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. And by the time they got to the train platform, and they got off the train, this man realized when the big entourage showed up to greet the great rabbi, the great sage, the Gadol Hador, he felt awful. That he had been so nervous, he had been so rude, and he begged Mechila from Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, the great founder of the Muslim movement, the ethicist, and he asked him for forgiveness. And Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said, I'm mocha you 100%, but can you tell me, why have you come to Vilna? You look so nervous. He said, yeah, I'm studying to be a shochet, to be a slaughterer, and I have my big exam over here by one of the big testers to get approval to be a shochet, and I'm just really unprepared, I'm really nervous. So he asked this young man, when is your exam? He said, next week. He said, I'm going to train you. I know a person. I have a good friend in Vilna. He's an expert. I'll pay all the tutoring fees. He'll train you. And he invested the time to be able to train this young man to become prepped for his exam. Sure enough, the man goes to his exam. He's properly prepared. And he aces the exam. He's given smicha in shchita. And before he takes leave of Vilna, this young man comes back to Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. And he says, it was very nice of you to not only forgive me for my rudeness, but also to pay for my tutoring and see to it that I passed my exam. Why did you go that extra mile for me when I was so rude to you? And Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said something amazing. He said, when you first asked for mechila, I wanted to forgive you. But I didn't truly believe it. I said the words because I want to be a good person. You got to forgive. You got to forgive. It's fine. I'm mochel. But in my heart of hearts, I got this sense I wasn't fully over the offense yet. And the way that I know, he said, how to get over a grudge against someone, how to get over a slight, an offense, is to give to them. And that which made you so nervous and actually offended me, I decided to find out what is it you needed. What would make you happy? What would make you more relaxed? And I gave to you specifically in that area. And now I can say, B'lev Shalem, with a full heart, that I truly forgive you. What a powerful idea. The idea that we could say we forgive each other, we could say we're best friends, but the idea is that by giving, that by actually being kind, that is the way to build relationships. Where he sums it up, the bottom line is at the end of paragraph 3. Zasher yitain ha'adam lezilasel, those to whom you give, lo yavad mimeno, you don't lose out. You think you lose by giving, you give all your money, you give all your time, you're being disadvantaged. No. Elazohi hispashus atzmuso, you are investing and spreading yourself into that person. Ki yargish asher gam chelek lo, v'chavero zasher nasan lo. You feel like you are part and parcel with that person, and that, he says, is called love. Love is not something you see with stars in your eyes on a first date to get so excited. That's not love. Love is the name we give to the relationship you build with someone by investing yourself and by giving to others. And in Parak 5, he explains how we can expand that. Talking far about children, it makes sense. Those we're forced to give to, those we're forced to supply everything that they need, of course it's going to build a very, very tight bond, a very strong love. But here he goes on to explain why it is the Torah says, V'yahavta l'reacha kamocha, which is a pasuk many have a hard time with. Love someone else like yourself? Can we be honest for a second? Can we ever truly love anybody like ourselves? maybe like our closest family members, but the pasuk is talking about all Jews, all people. Is that really possible? So Hillel famously, what'd you say?
It's a goal.
It's a goal, but...
It doesn't necessarily mean it may reach that height, but you should strive for that.
How would you strive toward loving people, strangers, as you love your family? How would you even begin? What'd you say?
Not your family.
How would you begin to do that? How would you begin?
That's not it. It's not the way you love your family. It's specifically the way you love yourself.
Okay, how do you love yourself?
And I think that most parents, you would know from this, you put your family first.
Family has to come first, absolutely, and it doesn't take away from the fact.
It's not the same level.
It's not the same level, but at the same time, the Torah is telling us to love people like we love ourselves. And loving yourself is a pretty high level. And where does that come from? So he has this most incredible idea he's about to say, based on what we just explained.
But again, I think it's just striving to come as close as possible.
Right.
I mean, you're going to go exactly 100%.
And he's going to explain how to get close to that. Meaning, we can agree that we're never going to get fully there. We're never going to fully arrive at the area where we actually love people like ourselves. But he's going to explain, how do we get there? How do we actually arrive at a place where we truly do love others like ourselves? So he's going to explain that by doing for others, we have the ability to love others like ourselves. Because if the reason we love families more is because our families are just, that's the way it is. God created us to love our families and strangers are strangers. Well, then that's it. It's not possible to create love for strangers. But what if we just explain the reason we love our families more is because we invest in them? What if we started investing in strangers? What would happen then, according to this hypothesis? So he explains in paragraph 2, the second to last paragraph. He says, "Ach yisponeinu ha'adam," keep in mind, "ki lasher yitein yahav." He keeps saying this. This is the main idea. To those that you give, those are the ones you're going to love. "V'gam yiyeh lo chelek bo," and then you become part and parcel with them. "V'yadabek elav," you become attached with them. "Kamur va'az," as we explained, "va'az yavchin v'yavin," here we go, this is my favorite line, "ki zeh asher zar nechshav lo." Those that you call strangers, he's going to redefine a stranger. Hu rak me'asher terem nasan lo. A stranger is only someone to whom you haven't yet invested time, energy, and giving. Va'od lo hitivimo. A person you haven't yet done kind acts to. Again, we are reorienting our understanding of love. It is not just this innate thing that comes for those closest to you. If you have people close to you, because you give to them, and you invest yourself in their well-being, and you care about what happens to them, those are the ones you're going to love. As you pointed out, we are supposed to give more to our families, because our primary obligation is to them, so we're going to love them more. But on some level, we are obligated to love other people the same way by giving to them. That's what he explains in the last line of this page. In that sense, we can explain via hafta the reacha kamocha literally. Many have struggled with this. Hillel in Masechta Shabbos famously said, he redefined this statement, not as love him like yourself, but that which you don't want done to you, don't do to your friend. And that seems plausible. Just don't, you know, key their car, cut them off in traffic. Don't do rude things. That seems attainable. But love like yourself seems impossible. But you know what he's saying? When you give to someone else, you invest yourself in them. They become an extension of you. They are you. They are kamocha. Literally. They literally can be kamocha. If you invest yourself in them, they represent your hard work, your energy, your efforts. And that makes them like you. That makes them an extension of yourself.
Is there any reasoning in terms of when they say love the neighbor like thyself, and the fact that the neighbor is like literally next door to you and is a person very close to you? Is there a certain rationale in the fact that that closeness of a neighbor has something to do with closeness of family in a way?
I'll repeat the question for the Zoomers. The question was asked if the expression neighbor, love thy neighbor, is any indication. The reality is in Hebrew, reacha doesn't mean neighbor. Reacha just means fellow Jew. So I don't know where the English translation came from, but I think reacha in simple Hebrew would just mean fellow man. So but that's a good question where that expression came from. So now as we near toward the end of the shiur, second half of the shiur, we turn toward what most of us think about when it comes to love. All the commercials, all the dating apps, all the different things. Love is about romantic relationships. So now how does this tie in? How does this idea? Step one was understanding that love for children is not necessarily innate. It's that we feel an obligation to give and provide for those that are under our care. And by doing so, we come to love them more because we have invested ourselves and given to them. Step two, by extension, if that's in our control, if love is something we control, then we can give to strangers and make them not strangers. Make them friends. Make them kamocha. We have that ability to turn people into extensions of ourselves. Again, we give more to our family, we love them more, we give more to our neighbors, but then in concentric circles, there's always room to give and to care and to be concerned with other people's well-being. But now as we go all the way inside the circles to romantic love, to love between spouses, so where does that come from and what exactly is that all about? And over here on page 38, in Perek Vav, Be'ahavas Ish V'Isha, love of spouses, he explains and he starts with a question, which we'll do Torah Shebaal Peh. He asks the question of, why did Hashem create romantic love, intimate love? What exactly is its function? So he quotes some philosophers who say the reason why it's necessary is in order to have kiyum ha'olam, to have continuity of the world. If there wasn't romantic love, people wouldn't get together, they wouldn't have children, and then society couldn't procreate and be able to pass on the next generation. Maybe that's the reason. Maybe that's the reason why God put in our nature to love and to have this idea of romantic love. He says, not true, because there are people who still feel it, even though they don't want to have children, or even though they've already had children, or even if there are people who are generally selfish. And there's still this need, there's still this romantic desire. Clearly it's coming from something else. He has a second suggestion, which he rejects, which is maybe it comes from Hakaras HaTov. People have a need to be grateful to others, they want to have someone take care of them, and then vice versa, and they want to have Hakaras HaTov. Maybe that's the source of love. And he says it can't be that either, because there's plenty of people who are very selfish, very obnoxious, don't show an ounce of gratitude to anyone else, and they still have this desire to be intimate. They have this desire for love, to get married, to be able to have a lifelong romantic relationship, and it's not based on Hakaras HaTov, it's not based on procreation. So where does it come from? So he writes over here in the third, in the where it's underlined, Al-Kei Nomar. Here is his suggestion about where romantic love comes from. Ki Yahava Zo Ba'a Al-Yedei Hishlimam Zeze. The need to feel complete, how we started off today. Companionship, camaraderie, the need to give to someone else, the need to be connected with other people. That is the idea of shlemus, of completeness of love. How does the expression go? You marry the right woman, you're complete. You marry the wrong woman, you're finished. Obviously, it works in both directions, clearly. But the idea is that a person who is getting married, is getting in a serious relationship, the purpose of that relationship is really supposed to be about giving to each other. When they give to each other, they are completing each other. To recognize, I am not complete by myself. Otherwise, I would stay by myself. I'm missing something. I'm missing that companionship. I'm missing that sense of wanting to give to someone else lifelong. Able to have that relationship. And it has to go both ways. It has to be able to last in a giving way. And if that's the case, he says, now we can understand why so many marriages don't work out. And why love fades. Why passion goes away. V'nei yisbar lanu, where it's underlined again. Lama berov ha-pamim lo ya'archu yemei ha'av ha'azah. Why doesn't love last? Why doesn't romantic love last? He's going to suggest it's because if the foundation for love is that giving, that sense of taking care of someone else, being invested in their well-being and their success. So what happens when people become takers in relationships? When they become focused only on their own self-indulgence, on their own desires, on their own greed, on their own fulfillment? If that's what turns a relationship from how it started, loving and starry-eyed under the chuppah, and all of a sudden, where it's underlined at the end, Tachas asher hiskashru techila liyos nosnim. Whereas relationships start out, and he's opining, this is what he's saying, it's all about relationships, and where love comes from, it's all built on giving. Me'ata hayu l'notlim. Over time, people become that internal beast we talked about last week. Can only be kept at bay for so long. If you're not taking an active role to give, you're not taking an active role to be a giver to someone else, so then you're not going to be able to feel the love anymore. As soon as that animalistic sense of taking and self-satisfaction comes in, b'chol echad yidrosh mere'ehu, Asher Yamali as Chovosav, Asher Hischayev Lo. Each person becomes a seeker. They become a taker. They become one who wants the other to fulfill all the obligations. I did this last week. Why is it always my turn? I have to always take out the garbage. I have to always wash the dishes. This is not a personal example, I'm just saying. Right? Person gets caught up in these things of it's not fair. It's not, that doesn't feel fair. It feels like it's I'm giving, and the other person is not giving back. Now, there's an old expression, like marriage is 50-50, it's a partnership 50-50. But I once spoke with a professional. I was having a conference with a successful marriage counselor, and he said, marriage isn't 50-50. Divorce is 50-50. Everything is divided up 50-50. Marriage isn't 50-50. Marriage is 100-100. If each one gives 100%, not tit for tat measuring, bean for bean, each one calculating, I did it 7 times, you only did it 6 times, it's your turn right now. If each person, it has to be a two-way street, if each person in the relationship has the sense of I want to give, I want to be the one to keep giving. And if they're both, if it's 100-0, that's not good either. You can't be the only giver in a relationship. If it's truly 100-100, if a relationship is all about the giving, not what can I seek from this relationship. It could be true in business, could be true with friends, but let's just say in marriage. If each one says, what can I give? How can I make someone else's day? How can I make my spouse's day today? How can I inquire about their well-being? How can I invest myself about them? That's going to build the love. On the last page, page 39 on top, he says, that is the advice he gives to chasanim and kalas, brides and grooms, on the day of their wedding. He says, v'chach ani omer tamid v'zug be'ei simchas kilulosim. When they get together at the wedding, I tell them the following advice. Hizaru, watch out. Yikarim, my dear friends, shetamid tishafu l'hasbiya nachas zelazeh. You should always strive to give to each other, to give nachas, to give satisfaction to each other. Kasher targishu b'chem b'shazo, exactly as you feel right now, keep that up. Ude'u asher b'rega shetatchilu, l'drosh d'risho zemizeh, the moment where each of you starts to ask the question of, what can I take from this relationship? Why am I not getting more? Hine kvar asharcha mikem b'hala. That's when the love is going away. Then you're finished. Good luck to you. When the giving stops, then the love stops. Because that's his thesis. The giving is what creates the love. That's his idea. Love is not something that just happens. Why does love wait in relationships? Why does it go away? Because it has to be maintained. How do you maintain love? Oh, flowers and chocolates and all. Yeah, but that's a symptom. That's not the bottom line. It's an example of giving. Terrific, right? Meaning it doesn't work because chocolate saves a relationship. It's the thought of giving, right? It's the thoughtfulness. It's the caring. It's the concern with someone else's sweet tooth or well-being or knowing what they like. I would like to end off with some of the research in psychology. There is a psychologist named John Gutman. Heard of John Gutman? I didn't realize until recently he was actually Jewish. He wears a kippah. John Gutman in the 90s developed what he called a love lab, where he studied relationships, and he was able to watch couples, newlyweds, interact for 15 minutes, and he was able to predict whether they would stay married or get divorced in 60 years, 10 years, 95% accurate. He watched them for 15 minutes when they were newlyweds, and he could already tell with 95% accuracy whether they would stay together down the line, 6 years, 10 years. What did he do? He asked the couples to fight, to argue about something, try to hash out something that you typically and perpetually disagree about. Finances and vacations and children, whatever. Anything that the couples typically disagree about. And he had them argue about it for 15 minutes. And he created this whole coding system based on their facial expressions, based on their eye movements, and based on all kinds of things. And he found that there were 4 different disasters, things he could pick up on in a matter of minutes for him, that would tell him whether this couple was destined to last, whether the love would endure or not. And one of the things he focused on was contempt. He was able to note, based on eye rolls, based on criticism in the language, if when they were arguing, and it's not a matter of whether you argue or don't argue. He told them to argue, so they were going to argue no matter what. How did he separate the successful couple, what he called the masters, from the disasters? How do you separate the masters from the disasters? He says it's the ones who are able to argue without contempt. The ones who are able to be non-condescending, non-cynical, non-belittling as they fight about whatever it could be, the dishes, the garbage cans, the color of the blinds, whatever they're small or big. If there's contempt, if there's that erosion of trust, of love, it's going to be a disaster. 20 years ago, he wrote a book called The 7 Principles for Making Marriage Work. And principle number 3 truly ties into what we're talking about tonight. We'll end off with this. He says that what separates the masters from the disasters is what they do during time of crisis. Just like all couples are going to argue no matter what, the question is how they disagree, how they differ, how they fight. There's always going to be a crisis. People have a hard day. People have a hard time. There's always going to be ups and downs in relationships and in life. The master couples, he says, turn to each other in difficult times. And the disaster couples are the ones that turn away from each other during difficult times. So what does it mean to turn towards someone else during a difficult time? So he says turning toward each other could mean spending time together, even before bad things come up, just doing small things together, going grocery shopping together, paying the bills, pay the bills together. Going outside to move the car together. Now you might say, those aren't fun things to do, and I don't particularly enjoy doing that with my spouse. Or Dessler would say, if you do those things with your spouse, you'll start to enjoy spending time with your spouse. If you don't spend time together, and you think, where's the spark, where's the relationship? I don't feel like spending time together, we don't have good time together. Well, maybe you need to spend time together and do things together to give time, energy, effort, and that makes the love. That's actually what builds up the relationship. So that's one aspect what Gottman said about turning toward each other, doing things together, just spending more time in the same room, spending time doing with each other. But secondly, he says, if you're really attentive, if you really turn towards someone else, you'll pick up on a myriad of opportunities throughout the day to be able to give to them. Every time you hear a sigh from your spouse, that's them saying something is wrong. So you could just walk by and be like, they're being a baby again, or it could be, what's wrong? They didn't say a word to you. You hear a sigh. Or they just complain about their day, complain about their boss, complain about their traffic, complain about their technology not working, whatever it is. But if in that moment you turn toward them, and you invest, and you care, and you say, something's wrong, just to offer to help, to offer support, empathy, not even to help, just to show, I'm noticing you, I'm paying attention to you. That builds trust, and that builds love. Gottman might say it as, when the person, the recipient of that act of kindness, feels cared for, attended to, noticed, it builds trust and love. Rav Dessler would say, it's the giver, it's the one who's paying attention, it's the one who's listening, it's the one who's watching out for those moments, spends an entire day listening for the groans, listening for the sighs, listening for the complaints, listening for the unhappiness in their partner's voice, and to say, something's wrong. Just, I'm here for you. If you need to vent, I'm here for you. On both ends, the person who's being cared for feels heard, feels understood. And in Rav Dessler's language, the person who's investing that time, that's what builds the love. If you care for a plant, you come to feel attached to it. Certainly a person, an intimate relationship, where you actively listen out for the little nuances that no one else can pick up on, but you've been married and you know what ticks them off, what sets them off, what ruins their day, what bothers them. The chocolates, right? It's those attentive things that are not in of themselves good, but it's the act of giving that's good. It's the act of giving that creates the love. So in this way, hopefully, whether it's children, whether it's friends, whether it's strangers, people who are not yet your friends, people you haven't yet given to, or in terms of families, in terms of romantic love, it's always this idea of 100-100, not 50-50, always looking to give, always looking to share. To keep these ideas in mind that we yearn for company because we have that sense of wanting to give. We have a desire for children because we invest of ourselves in them, and that's the continuity. It's not necessarily that we give to those we love, but it's that we love those that we give, which means that strangers are people with potential for us to love them kamocha, because as long as you give to them, that is on the table. Romantic love is this desire to give intimately, but it doesn't last when there's not this constant giving on both sides. As Gottman said, the disaster couples are the ones who fail to capitalize on these many opportunities throughout the day. Rosh Hashem, we should all be zocha to be master couples, and for those in other types of relationships with children and with friends and with coworkers, whatever relationships that we are in, to capitalize on these relationships by always giving, always looking for opportunities to give, and ultimately building the love.